Are we ready to start this jamboree?
What kind of jamboree is it?
A gym jamboree.
Is it a country bear jamboree?
I feel like that's a thing.
It is a thing.
Was it like a Disney thing?
Yeah. They had like the animatronic bears, and then they turned it into a movie.
Didn't they finally eliminate those?
No, they made it into a movie a couple years ago.
Oh, whatever.
The word jamboree really disturbs me.
Why is that?
I don't know. It just sounds like something I...
But it's okay, because in the 90s, in the 70s, they turned it into a jam session.
And a Winnebago called the Jimboree. Yeah.
I hate Jubilee.
Well, yes. She sparkles and shocks people.
She's basically a giant walking quilt. In the winter.
Pretty much.
Just static electricity everywhere.
And big old dangly earrings. And goggles. And a
oversized coat.
Yellow silicone rubber
coat. But they all wore oversized coats, so it's okay.
That's why she wears rubber gloves and a coat.
Yeah.
That just dawned on me.
But they all wear oversized. Like, all of them but Wolverine. Wolverine's the only one who's like, to heck with your fashion. I'm going to wear my little bomber jacket, and the rest of you can wear your long coats.
He wore yellow and blue spandex.
No, I'm thinking about their casual clothing.
That was his casual clothing.
No, his casual clothing. Remember, he had the bomber jacket and the blue jeans that were exceptionally tight around the thigh?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. They're basically painted on.
He wore this.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Damn Art Majors. This will be the last official episode before our holiday special that will be airing next week. So be sure to
this will be airing
that.
Next week. Well, the week after.
Don't confuse the time thing and the calendar. We're going to start this episode.
The way we start all of them.
What you drinking?
What you drinking? Aaron, what you got? You had to open your bottle. There was foil involved.
Yeah, this is a very special beer. It's by Spaten. It's called the Optimator, and it's a Doppelbock. And it's one of the best Doppelbocks you can get. It's one of the official Munich, Germany brews that applies for Oktoberfest. It's really good. I highly recommend it. Do it. Get it. Eat it. Drink it. Love it. Pee it.
Dutters, what do you got?
I have 1050 Imperial Stout.
Oh my god, you're gonna get shit faced. Isn't that like 10%?
This is 10.5%.
Holy crap.
But I'm not driving tonight, so it's okay. We're recording at my house. This is by Oscar Blues Brewery in Brevard, North Carolina. But yeah, the 1050 Imperial Stout. I've actually never had this before. But the guy at the bottle shop, he loves it, and he told me if you like chewing your beer, this is the one to go for.
When you poured that into your glass, it looked like straight up motor oil pouring in. It was quite a sight to be seen.
It's tasty.
On the other side of the beer spectrum, I have a... Let me see if I can... What happened there? Are you not mad enough for that beer?
I'm trying
you
to show
not
off.
That, dude? Take it slow.
Remember they said chew your beer.
Yeah. I tried to swallow it. Carry on.
On the other end of the spectrum, I got... How do we pronounce this?
Linenkugel,
with their, I guess it's seasonal, cranberry ginger shandy. If you are a fan of the cranberry ginger ale, you will like this beer. It tastes like Christmas on a beach. It doesn't taste like a beer at all. And unlike your 5%, it's a whopping 4. So there you go.
Who's 5%?
Or 10%.
Yeah. I don't even know what alcohol mine is.
It's European. They don't put that on there.
You're right. 7.6. You're wrong.
We are here to pump you up.
Yeah, just Spaten. It's Optimator. Anyway.
That was good.
Anyway.
I like that.
Delicious. Dennis, stop it.
As you can see or hear, Dunder still has a guest in his house. Dennis has returned for another week. He's trying to work things out.
And this is what it sounds like to watch someone who is slightly handicapped entertain himself, folks. Just listen to the silence.
Dennis has very bad eyesight. So yeah, he's cross-eyed. He's constantly looking around, and even the slightest thing will freak him out, and he'll be running away.
Anyway. Like I said earlier, next week we've got the holiday show. I've been busy writing up the games for that. This will be pretty much a majority of all game show. We'll tell some stories and have some fun in between. We'll have a couple guests. We're going to split Dutters and Aaron up into two teams with these guests.
Team D and Team A. D-A.
And they will go head-to-head for some prize that I have yet to figure out.
I'll be making the prize.
Maybe it should be more like...
It'll be a damn
RBG's
pencil holder.
It'll be more like you don't want to lose more than you want to win. How about that? We'll see.
The winner gets to push the damn art major's bell.
There consequences if you don't win?
Yes.
AKA lose?
Maybe. We'll
see.
We'll
get
find
to
out.
Lick a frozen metal pole outside.
There you go.
Okay.
If you lose.
And then after that, we're going to take a hiatus from the show for a little bit. A couple weeks. We're going to start developing some new ideas, some new projects, some new events for 2015. You can still contact us via the email, Twitter, and Facebook. How do I put this? Damwart Majors will still be alive and well. We'll just be hibernating for a couple weeks, and we're going to come back a little bit more together, a little stronger, with some exciting stuff for you guys in 2015. So that's something to look out for.
Actually, we're all going into rehab, and we'll be back when we get back.
It's not rehab. It's Alcoholics Anonymous.
No.
We're beyond AA, man. No. We're going into full-on rehab.
If anything, I'm going to harness my drinking ability.
We're going to be imbibing more. We're going to come back with better and fancier beers.
We're going to come back and all we're going to drink is liquor.
We're going to come back with a new segment instead of what you drink and it's what you shooting up.
No, I'm going to... Over the Christmas break, I'm going to take up making moonshine. And so it'll be, what are you stilling?
That's the last thing you need to do. Because you're just going to end up like fucking up your hand one way or another.
Well, it's not, I mean, I guess you could burn yourself. Maybe you like accidentally get your hand
if there's
stuck
a
in a
way
masher.
For you to injure your hand in the name of productivity, you're going to find a way.
Well, there's an artist out there who found a way to royally screw up his hand. On purpose. He turned his hand into a chia pet.
That would bring us to this segment of weird ass art,
yeah.
If you will.
I actually like the name of that segment. I think that needs to be a recurring.
That could be a thing.
Yeah,
weird ass art.
Weird ass art. Every week we discuss a new piece of artwork that is just hitting the world of art, and it is, well, unusual. Whether it's a guy climbing out of a stone vagina, or in this case, a man. Planting.
Oh, dude, the giant Christmas tree butt plug. Weird ass art.
Yeah.
Where were we
on
that?
Today we have David Kata?
Kata.
I don't know how
let's go with Kata.
An A with
a thing.
What do you call the thing?
Accent mark.
It has a name.
Umlaut.
Yes, thank you. An A with an umlaut over it. Planted a plant in a pocket of skin on his hand. Walked around with
this article comes to us from Huffington Post. David here, seems as if he had cut a bit of his hand to form a pocket, let that heal over, but keep the skin itself loosely tied. He then incorporated soil into this skin pocket in the palm of his hand and planted...
I don't know about that. There's some shots that have a root. I don't know if that's necessarily...
Yeah.
This is all part of his series, which translates to Winged Roots. It was developed right after he decided to move to Berlin. He felt that it was important to an important step in his life, seeing himself forced to leave many things behind to start a new life in an unknown place with new people and a completely different language. He felt like his feet slowly lifted from the ground, leaving their estate to begin to fly. His superficial pocket has been peeled away from the epidermis, soil inserted, vegetation tucked within, transforming the human hand into a source of life for natural growth. Aaron, you came into this without reading the notes nor doing any pre-research on this. What are you? You have the most unadulterated experience right now. How do you feel?
I feel skeptical. I think A, this isn't possible. B, it doesn't look possible. As in some of the photos, there's just no freaking way you have roots going through your hand and coming out the other side. I mean, sepsis takes, you know, 24 hours to kill you.
I think they're staged.
Well, yeah. I think the root part is.
I think the first picture you see is his hand with the pocket, the soil, and this very well developed, well, it looks like a piece of branch that's been clipped and then shoved into the pocket with the dirt.
Yeah,
there's... I don't think he planted anything and allowed it to grow because unless he wouldn't be able to sleep.
Yeah, unless that's kudzu or bamboo. I mean, that's a 3-week-old plant.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting photography series. The fact that instead of Photoshop, you know, this could very easily be done with Photoshop.
Sure.
Yeah.
And instead of doing that, he actually went to the effort of slicing over a small layer of the epidermis, removing it, opening it, putting in dirt, putting in a twig with some live leaves on it temporarily, and then photographing it. I mean, that's dedication to your photograph right there.
Were they only photographs?
Well, there's photographs and video, apparently. I don't know where the... You can see more on that series here.
I don't think I want to see a video of his skin pocket.
Oh, no. Oh, no. This is other work that he's done where he stitches portraits of loved ones into the palm of his hand. Oh, my God.
That's already more believable.
Yeah, no, he's like...
So the skin on your palm is hardly a 16th inch thick. I mean, there's no way... Also, from where that pocket is, there's no way you would be able to carve skin away without bleeding, you know, extensively in order to develop a pocket.
So he like sewed their portraits into his hand.
It looks like he did a bunch of stitches.
I thought you meant like he had a little picture of them and sewed the picture into his hand. No, he did like portraits made of thread.
Like cross stitching on the palm of his hand.
Yeah, look at how much he's bleeding.
And that's after the stitches have been removed.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean this guy is clearly really into stabbing himself with a tiny needle a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually doesn't surprise me that he would remove a pocket of skin.
Is this guy your new idol?
No. This is the kind of thing I try to avoid, man. Despite what people think, I try to avoid hurting my hands. Unlike this guy, man.
That is the most useless statement.
What?
Despite what people think, I try to avoid using... Oh, look at this art series of me cutting into my fucking palm and sewing my nephew into my flesh. Yes.
I clearly the guy's right-handed because it's only his left hand. And he's not working with anyone else, that's for sure. Hopefully he's working with a psychologist.
And it's the same as interviewing a cop and asking him, you know, how often he uses his taser. He says, I try my best not to use my taser in any situation. And before he even finishes his statement, he tases some random passerby. I don't know. It's very weird. The photographs are nice. They're very interesting in a series. They're obviously very digitally freshened up. So I have no faith in the fact that this is a real thing. It would be a cool idea.
I think the pocket is real. Obviously, the plant didn't grow from his hand. But the pocket could be real. He could have put some dirt in there and then put the stem in, took the photo, and that's really what it is. But like, it's the illusion that it grew from his hand.
Yeah.
The top comment on another page I linked to was, "You are opening your body to bacteria and infection. No matter what or how great your project seems to be, staph or worse, MRSA is prevalent. And believe me, getting rid of a life-threatening infection is expensive and time-consuming. Besides, stupid."
In response, it makes for a nice photograph.
It does. The same effect can be...
easily done in Photoshop.
The same effect can also be done with some... slightly tinted Elmer's glue.
Mm-hmm. True.
Applied to the hand, allowed to dry, and then separated into a tiny pocket in which you fill with soil, and then or latex.
Yeah, flesh-colored Hollywood latex.
But seeing in his other series of works how excited he seemed to be to stitch into his own hand, he strikes me as the kind of person who would sit there with a scalpel and slowly work on peeling back. Because, I mean, that would take some time to...
I don't know how the hell you would get a skin pocket from the palm of your hand. There's nothing there. Unless this dude is constantly, like, at least for 5 hours every day, rubbing his hand on an abrasive surface or, I don't know, beating his meat for long enough to develop, you know...
The only thing I can think is if you apply heat. And you burned yourself and created a burn.
It bubbles up and then you...
You created like a...
That would be the quicker way to do it, but...
That would fall off, though. I mean, think about how quickly your skin wants to separate after that because it's healing.
Yeah, and the problem with me, like, you know, I use my hands
What do you think Thanksgiving at the Kata's place is like? He's around his dad.
Don't touch the fucking turkey with your left hand.
And he comes in with like pictures of his family, like, you know, stitching his hand, and like his uncle Ned is just looking at him, going like, "This is what you do, eh, David? Yeah. This is you, huh?
Come here, Joey. Come here, nephew Joey. Look what I did. It's a portrait. Oh my God, Uncle David! What the fuck? Get away from me!"
No, I honestly see...
So, how's your art career working?
You've got the uncle who's like, "Hey, pull my finger." You got him, he walks in, he's like, "Hey, pull my thread." this is the kind of guy that I honestly see, like, one day just chopping his hand off and sewing it back on himself just for the sheer documentation purposes of it. And then dying a week later from severe gangrene.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But, you know, people go to weird lengths to make their art. I guess other people, you know, do more normal things. Like, I don't know, listen to music when they make their art.
Music is a lot safer than sewing shit into yourself. So maybe we should switch gears here for our roundtable discussion.
At the round table at the square table.
Was that necessary?
Sorry, no, I was... remarking about an email I got. Go ahead.
It's good to know we have your undivided attention.
I was reading the notes.
I only want his divided attention. I'd be afraid what would happen with his undivided attention.
I would write shit about you on Facebook.
So I've kind of come up with a couple of questions in regards to auditory influences on the visual arts, if you will. AKA, what are you listening to when you're arting? So, I don't know, like, just kind of, once again, into a roundtable discussion, so it's pretty open. Aaron, what do you fill your ears with when you are creating, and why?
Usually music.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't really do the whole podcast thing while I'm actively drawing or,
No radio shows.
Working on
no,
personal work. Not really. I mean, if I'm at work, the tasks that I'm given on a daily basis are pretty mindless to begin with. So I don't really have to think creatively so mm-hmm. much as I do just have to assemble a system of requirements together to make a product. It's not like I'm sitting down to a drawing and I'm having to think, you know, how could I do this? What is the inside shape of the knee actually like? What about in this lighting scenario? It's way too much thought for me to actually want to listen to a podcast or somebody talking normally. So I want something that's going to help me concentrate, like music. What in particular do you want to know?
What in particular pieces are some of your favorites to listen to?
Motherfucker.
Bob. All right, artists. Artists. Where are some of your favorite artists to listen to?
St. Vincent.
Yes, St. Vincent would be one. though it got to a point where...
David Bowie, Moody Blues.
All three of those I had to stop listening to because I was listening to them too much. I don't know. I've gotten to really like a lot of electronic music. A lot of the retro, late 70s, 80s revival kind of stuff where they're using primarily synthesizers and keyboards. Emphasis on bass and melody. I've steered away from like the heavier music, like metal or industrial. I can't even. It's been so long since I've listened to that kind of angry shit, except for one band. There is one band that I really wanted to talk about in this scenario, and it's a band called Death Grips. They are an industrial hip hop band, and this is.
Sounds like how I make love to myself.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't say that, Dutters. You said that.
They're an industrial hip hop band, and they
didn't
are.
Sound like someone with marbles in his mouth, so clearly that was not me.
They are the heaviest, darkest, most raw shit I've ever listened to the point where I would task anyone to actually listen to their music and try to draw something not insane. Like if you're really trying to concentrate.
Sounds like a challenge.
And take your time to work on something.
So would you say that this is what you're listening to actually affects your creation?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So usually whenever I do a piece, if I have a commission or whatever, I think about the mood that's, you know, I'm trying to capture in this piece and I'll find some music that matches that. And I'll put it on so that I'm, you know, essentially illustrating the feeling. Yeah, getting in the mood. But with Death Grips, I'm purposely using them to make it tough for me to concentrate so that I end up concentrating more.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense. And I found it works very well. There are such angry, heavy music, but there is an emphasis on melody and beat and bass, and it flows extremely well. Like, I usually would never use the word flow to describe music because it's such an overused term, but it works really well when it comes to working all around a piece, all at once. You know, not... Say you're drawing a portrait. You're going to start out with the interior facial features, the eyes, the nose, the mouth, and work your way outwards. You'll probably gesticulate the outside of the face, the general proportions and everything, but you're still going to end up spending more time on the inside of the face at first, just to really capture that and nail it. If you're listening to something so insane and tough to relax and like concentrate to, you're going to end up working all over the place. And in my opinion, that ends up making for a more interesting piece.
Dutters.
Mm-hmm.
What do you fill your head with? Saw blades?
Pretty much.
Grinders.
The sounds of motors.
Do you listen to Stomp?
No.
Because that would be awesome to listen to.
I actually listen to... I have very, very distinct playlists based on what I'm doing. When I am drawing, I pretty much only listen to classical music.
What?
Yes, I pretty much stick to Beethoven. I stay away from his symphonies. I usually stick to the concertos.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tend to be a little bit shorter and quicker paced. And then Bach as well, mainly his cello work because it's incredible. But that's pretty much what I listen to when I'm drawing, sketching. And then anytime I work, I'm doing sanding or finishing work, I only listen to podcasts. Other people talking.
What podcasts do you recommend?
I listen. Well, I actually, they're podcasts, but they're also readily available on they're NPR shows. In particular, I listen to Car Talk, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is more of a game show, radio game show.
Yeah.
Radio Lab, This American Life, and I'm leaving, there's another one. TED Talks, which is pretty much like a watered-down version of the TED actual interviews. And then it's the one out of Chicago.
The retro one?
No, it's predominantly run by a black guy. It's more like a combination of slam poetry and kind of slam stories. Generally, it tends to have more of a black slant to it. But it's really well produced, incredible stories. It's an NPR show. I'm trying to remember what it is right now, and I am drawing a blank.
Def Jam?
No. No. It comes on after This American Life.
You'll figure it out.
It'll come to me by the time when I stop thinking about it, it'll come to me. So that's what I'm doing, like finishing work. When I'm actually like in the process of like running around different power tools and stuff, that's when it comes to whatever mood I'm in. And I'll switch between when I'm working with a tool, your focus is on the tool because you're not trying to cut your hands open. So I tend to ignore what I'm listening to. It's really just there for the background. And I have a system. I put earbuds in and then I put my ear protection over my earbuds. So it kind of gets this crazy. I am fully in my zone, of music. And cause I'm trying to block out as much of the sound of the power tools as possible. But like I'll theme my days. So like Monday, this past Monday was Mercury Monday, so I listened to Queen all day. The next Tuesday was Tenacious D Tuesday, so it was like just Jack Black and Kyle Gass just all day.
Yeah.
I mean it was ridiculous. And then I had to switch it up towards the end of the day because they've only put out so much.
I can't do that shit.
But well, see the thing is like I'll sit there and I'll focus on one song for a minute, and then I'll start working on something. 3 hours will go by, and I will suddenly be like, I didn't listen to any of the music was on, but I didn't hear any of it.
Yeah.
So then the album comes back, or goes back around. I'm like, oh, sweet. I missed this song. The only problem I have with Spotify on my headphones, the commercials are twice as loud as the music.
Not only that, but you only get like the same four commercials in rotation. And if you're not interested in Advance Auto or like the like Sausage People or McCafe, like mix I don't get it those. Up.
You guys don't have Spotify accounts?
No.
Oh, I do.
Pay for that.
No.
It's like $10 a month.
It's $10 a month, so you don't get commercials. Pretty much it.
Well, no, because it allows you to also download to your phone.
You can also share and follow. Follow people.
But anyway. No, I just remember I have so much of my own music like that I own, so I can just build my playlists, load them up on my phone, and I'm good to go. So I very rarely listen to Spotify.
Yeah.
I've actually found for me a new way to discover music is turning on the college station. For us, it's WKNC, the NC State station. Listening to it to work and coming from work, I get to hear a vast variety of music and styles. What I do is I try to remember the band name and the song, so the next time I'm at the computer, I can go to WKNC.org and look up the they actually have on the website like the times in which they played every song. So if I forgot, but I was like, I remember at like 6:45, like this was a song.
I usually totally just disregard what they say the band is.
Yeah, because
they've been totally fucking wrong sometimes.
Yeah, all the time.
I'm like, no, that was a really good song. Fuck you for fucking it up.
So then I go on to Spotify. Once I got the band name and the song, I add it to a new folder I created called One-Offs.
Mm.
And I've so far have over 2 hours worth of just one songs that I've liked from the college station. It's really diversified my music library.
I wish WZMB did that. Go ahead.
What? Snap Judgment. That's the other podcast I listen to.
Mm. There you go.
Snap Judgment. Yep, just came to me. Anyway, check them out. It's really good.
As far as podcasts that I can recommend, there's a comedy podcast I listen to called Damn Art Majors. No, there's a comedy podcast I listen to called Baby Geniuses. I mentioned it on the last episode when we were talking about... What was it? The logo thing. Which I never did even ask you guys what your favorite logo was. Anyway, Baby Geniuses is hosted by a comedian of some regard and an illustrator of some regard. And they invite two guests per episode. One guest they interview and they discuss their favorite particular things. The other guest pretends to be an expert in some particular field. And they end up it's like an impromptu bullshitting segment. So they'll say, "Oh, I'm an expert on warfare. What kind of warfare? All warfare from the beginning of time. Here, let me explain it to you." And they're usually like full of shit, but it's funny how they have a really good way of saving themselves. But the things that they do on this podcast are all gimmicks. So they open with, "How's your life going?" to Wikipedia page of the week to and it's usually a user submitted Wikipedia page. They talk about it in real time and discuss it. Usually it's really fucked up Wikipedia pages. They have a one-on-one question session. They bring on the guest and they anyway, the gimmicks go on. The other podcast is called Your Dreams, My Nightmares. It's strictly illustration and painting oriented. It's hosted by an illustrator of a high regard named Sam Weber. And he invites any and all illustrators that have, that are up and coming, that are very well established, that have been established for 40 years. He invites them on and he asks them essentially the hardest questions that you can be asked as an artist. And it's extremely entertaining.
Cool.
And informative. But yeah, I would recommend.
What is a hard question to ask?
I mean,
the T-bone or the sirloin?
I'll put it this way. If he asked me to come on to the show, I would find out what day he wants me to come on and spend the entire time coming up with legitimate answers for anything that I can justify as art. Or why I do what I do, or how I do what I do. Because he could bring you on and ask you, how do you justify, doing this in college and doing this now?
Or, does he do it in like a like antagonist,
no,
pretentious way? Like,
no.
How do you justify? I'd be like,
no.
Easily.
No, I think he's genuinely asking you because
defend yourself.
The way you've described it, it sounds more like he's just kind of there to basically learn his audience.
Yeah, it's not a grilling session. It's not accusatory. He brings you on there to ask you these questions to inform the illustration world.
Got
because
it.
In any given situation, in any given question that he asks, there's somebody out there asking themselves that thing. So he could, have a guest on there and he asks them, how do you feel about art? I mean, it's that open-ended of a question sometimes. And usually it's strange. The guests that he has on there do not tend to ramble. I mean, they'll break off into tangents and stuff, but they will give a pretty decisive answer most of the time.
So that means none of us will ever get on that show.
No. He would probably kick me off.
I already know. He'd probably throw me in another room and be like, no, we're done with you. You're too loud. You're breaking everything.
What podcast would you recommend, Adam?
Obviously, I'm a fan of the Smodco network, so some of the things like Tell 'em Steve Dave is kind of where I got the idea for Damn Art Majors in general. Phoebe is a lot of fun.
Phoebe?
Four Eyes and Beard It's Scott Mosier, the producer, and Matt Mira from The Nerdist.
Okay.
It's a crossover Nerdist Smodcast. They're not very good at keeping... You're lucky to get one a month.
Mm-hmm.
I also recommend... I'm falling out of love with The Nerdist podcast, but that's a whole other thing. I recommend this one. It's called The Unexplained with Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes is dead.
No. It's a British... radio personality named Howard Hughes, who has a very soothing voice. He's a very intellectual, very warm British chap.
At least he reads that way.
And he says,
at least that. He's had...
He says it's the way of the future a lot.
He's had several years of broadcasting experience over with like the BBC and whatnot. But his whole thing is he discovered that podcasting... for the most part, is unadulterated broadcasting, not controlled by the big media heads.
Yeah.
So he started, I guess when he had a radio show, having people who had paranormal or extraterrestrial things happen, and he would interview them. And he's very respectful, and he's very, you know, engaging. He's very intelligent. He tries to find... people who have more than just a story, but they actually have some research behind what they're talking about. It can get very conspiracy theory-esque, and it can get a little unnerving at times. If anything, the passion that people have towards this stuff, but he has a really good way of bringing everyone back down and, you know, explaining like, look, don't buy into everything you hear on this show. Like, live your life. Don't be afraid of these things. But always keep your mind open. He also really is a huge advocate for independent media. Not being controlled by sponsors or, you know, parent companies and things like that. I would recommend it. I mean... even I listen to it with a campfire story kind of source of entertainment more than I do like truth seeking, if you will, which is a theme they really try to kind of drill home. But if you just kind of listen to it as like a entertainment value, it can be kind of fun. Why not?
Cool. Sounds good.
Also, I mean, the only reason I listen to podcasts is for entertainment and stories.
Yeah.
I mean, Car Talk is two guys that know a lot about engines. And
Does that make you concentrate, though?
Well, that's what I'm standing. I'm sitting there.
Okay, so
I am so...
Yeah, okay. It's like, that's like,
for me, like I said, I mean, podcasts are... I'm doing mindless, like, sanding and finishing, painting, stuff like that.
I was
going to
say, it's the same situation as...
But, now, but like, if I'm doing assembly work, where I actually am fitting tiny pieces together and I need to pay attention, generally I go with, like, electronic music, the fewer lyrics the better, just kind of a beat that I can sit there and I just like find myself assembling to doing whatever, and then like, you know, I pick a musical artist when I'm just kind of running around working in the shop,
right.
And then when I'm drawing classical music.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what's awesome is when I'm editing video, I'm working on a project right now that is a montage that needs to be synced up to music, so while I'm having to replay the song 150 times, I can't really listen to iTunes or Spotify. So a podcast is nice because I can listen to a conversation while editing using music for timing and pacing. But then I'll have other projects that are interviews and I have to listen to somebody talk. And I have to listen to them say the same thing 150 times. So I can't really listen to a podcast while cutting an interview.
Yeah.
But I can listen to music. So it's a nice back and forth between, you know, listening to Spotify and the podcast on iTunes.
Yeah.
Also, No Big Two comic review. Check it out.
So I have a question for you guys, like right in the same vein. Do you use music whenever you're creating art? Do you use music to forcibly change your current mood and let me fucking start over. Do you use music to forcibly change the current mood that you're in to a different mood, or do you choose music that fits the mood of the piece that you're working on?
I choose the music that emphasizes the mood I'm in. A perfect example of this is I worked my office I shared at a time with three other individuals, and they always knew when I was mad because I would have a certain playlist that I would crank, and when that when they could hear the like 90s alternative like blaring, they knew to leave Adam alone. He is not happy. Yeah. So I'm kind of like a rattlesnake.
So in this situation, you would be creating a piece potentially not for a commission. Like, say it was something where the subject matter is dictated to you by the job, you would still choose a angry
playlist. I think music itself plays more into my emotion than it does the piece that I'm trying to accomplish.
Okay.
If I want to hurry up and get something done, I don't listen to fast music. If I want to feel romantic, I don't, you know, and do a romance piece, I don't play, you know, romantic music.
Lionel Richie.
Barry White. I don't think so. I don't think it influences my work so much as it influences, like I said, it amplifies whatever I'm feeling that moment, but that doesn't necessarily transcend into my work.
Okay. So it's just keeping you awake.
Yeah, sure.
Entertained. Okay. What about you?
I use music to influence my mood. When I drive, I listen to the classical station that we get around here. It's actually really nice
because
it's local supported, so you don't get commercials all the time. I get very angry when I drive.
No shit. You spend most of your day on I-40.
And and it doesn't help that I'm driving around in a 16.5-foot long truck.
Yep.
So I try to stay calm. Commercials irritate me. most of the music you find on the regular radio stations are really irritating. And I'm generally too lazy. My commute is so short. I mean, it's a 15 to 20 minute commute. So it's really not worth it for me to sit there, get in my truck, plug in my phone, you know, pull something out of there. So I just turn on the radio. I just let the radio play on the classical station. So I use that to keep me relaxed when I'm driving so I don't run idiots off the road. Of course, I might be the idiot. Who knows?
Okay.
I think I use classical music, like when I'm sketching, is for me, it helps me focus. It kind of clears my mind because there's no, in most of the pieces I listen to, there's very few lyrics. If there are any, singing, it's generally in another language, German or Italian or some language that I don't speak, I can't understand. And it generally has more of a musical quality than a lyrical quality to it. So it helps kind of block out not other voices in my head, but just the other distractions in my head. Like, oh, I need to take care of it. I can just sit there and focus on the actual drawing or sketch that I'm working on. And I listen to my music probably way too loud. Like, I'm one of those people, like, earbuds are in and like everyone in the room can hear what's coming out of it. So, you know, probably not healthy, but I'm blaming that on the power tools.
Yeah.
If I'm working in the shop, I'm so focused on what I'm doing with my hand, like what I'm working on. The music is just there as having something in the background that's a lot nicer to listen to than, you know, whatever tool I've got running at the time, because the high-pitched whirring and stuff kind of gets annoying.
Yeah, the worst-case scenario is listening to high-powered motors that make a consistent... they make a consistent noise that you don't like,
yeah.
So you tend to ignore it, which supposedly, psychosomatically, will make you ignore what you're doing, which leads to injury.
Yeah.
Hint, hint. Yeah. Nudge, nudge.
I had it happen once where I was in the shop working. My back was to the door. Someone yelled my name. I didn't hear them because, you know, music, headphones. They yelled louder. So they came up and tapped me on the shoulder, and I about punched them in the face.
Well, thanks for telling me not to ever sneak up on you ever.
Because if someone were to turn on a table saw, like right now, I'd be like, oh, table saw's on. And then I would just ignore it.
Yep.
It would just be... And I would just hear the hum happening. And it makes all those electric motors with a blade make that you the sound of the blade moving through the air, but then that electric hum of the motor. And it's like this beautiful, like, symphony of.
So you've got the whir, the whirring sound of the electricity going through the motor, coupled with the sound of it forcing air around.
Moving air, yeah.
Those two noises together are all one consistent tone that is nothing pleasing to the ear. So you just
block it out.
Yeah, like I work in front of a glue station for upwards of 3 hours every day. What is that out of 8 hours? It's fucking damn near like 40%. I have to have something else, otherwise I literally get anxious and like I don't want to be there anymore, but I have work to do, so I have to. If I don't have some sort of music playing or some sort of other noise other than that, it drives me fucking insane.
For me, it kind of becomes hypnotic.
Uh-huh.
Like, if I spend a day just cutting, like, French cleats, so all I'm doing is pushing MDF through a blade.
Yep.
Like, all day long, it gets to a point where I'm looking at the saw blade, and I'm just like, is it even on? Like, what am I... Like, and I'm just sitting there, I'm just like, I'm pushing...
Let me just touch it with my hand and find out.
It's one of those things where, like, well, my brain has just completely... it's incredible how your brain works. Like, it will take something that is an annoyance, and it'll register it as an annoyance, and then it will ignore it completely.
Mm.
And I'll find myself, I've got my headphones, like if I, let's say I forgot to charge my phone. So I am sans music. And so I've just got the headphones on. And so all I kind of can hear the sound, but it's there. And my brain is just like, what are we doing right now? Like, what is going on? I've like sitting here, I've cut down like 200 cleats and I'm on, you know, 201, 202, 203, 204. And
it's an auditory,
I didn't know that was gonna happen.
But you need something to break that monotony of the noises,
yeah,
that are kind of making your brain go catatonic.
Aaron, I got one more question. I kind of wrote it with you in mind.
Thanks.
So here you go. In a world where digital music causes CDs to collect dust, is the interest in vinyl going to save the music distribution as a physical commodity?
Thank you for bringing that up. That was actually another tangent I was going to mention.
Because, let me tell you, I've been looking for a CD, and it came out a couple years ago. I don't have an AUX port in my Jeep. So, like,
but
I have
a
six-disc...
vinyl player?
No, but I have a six-disc changer. And what I'm noticing, like, I went to Target, I went to Best Buy... I went to, like, Ed McKay's. Nobody had this fucking album. And I'm just like, nobody's even carrying this band anymore. And I'm just like, what happened to CDs?
Oh,
but then, like, if I want the album on vinyl, I'm sure I could go to, you know, School Kids and pick it up.
For 20 bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I still can't listen to that in my car.
No.
You can make it happen.
You could.
They can't drive.
Ultimately, what I would have to do is, like, download it from iTunes, then get a bunch of blank CDs, then burn a CD, then throw it in my car, and, you know, the whole thing. But for the first time since, I don't know, the 80s, vinyl is on the rise. Why do you think that is?
Well, there's an obvious massive resurgence in retro anything. So naturally, shit from the 70s is going to be popular now. People aren't going to start going back and, like, you know, grabbing up cassette tapes and stuff because it's too soon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a dead medium, although cassette tapes, I think, have a higher longevity than vinyls do.
I can believe that, yeah.
I mean, it's...
But the sound quality was never as good with cassette tapes as it was with vinyl. I just felt like you always heard that.
No. I mean, so vinyl is the...
There's a lot of sound effects in this episode.
Vinyl is like one of the closest approximations to the original analog recording of anything that you can get. Cassette tapes would probably be the next best. I mean, there's 1.5 million audio files out there that... would argue that with me, but you know what? You call yourselves audiophiles, so go fuck off. I have no doubt in my mind that cassette tapes will have a resurgence. they already are in, to some degree because of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
The Awesome Mix Volume 1 is an actual thing. Like, they are selling those as cassette tape. I actually thought about buying one because it's a cool gimmick. But people are... There's Japanese bands that make demos on cassette tapes, and they sell like hotcakes because it's a commodity.
My 17-year-old brother picked out a set of glasses, like drinking glasses, and he didn't know what the image was. He just knew it was vintage. My mom grabbed it and looked at it, and she goes, "Why do you want a cassette tape screen printed on your glass?" And he's like, "Is that what that is?"
I still
it's like
listen
this
to
world,
cassettes.
You know.
It might as well be like a fucking what do they call this? Shit, I can't remember what they call them. Steel, a steel with cuneiform tablet writing on it or something.
I mean, I still have some cassettes that my dad made of compilations that he made off of. I think he was recording off of a record. Building like Grateful Dead compilations that he could then take into his car.
That was a huge thing between 1975 and like 83 to have a turntable that would connect to a dual cassette receiver was like huge because then you could rip, you know,
and you could build mix CDs off of vinyl and give it as gifts. And that would take hours.
It's a mixtape. You could give it to your girlfriend. She'll love you forever.
I mean, I remember, like, mixtapes for me was, you know, let me pull these songs, download, done, burn a CD. But, like, someone made an actual mixtape? That's love and dedication to
sister. A mixtape can get you laid.
Or the mixtape off of the radio. I did that once. This is before I had a CD burner. And we didn't have a computer in my house. And I would listen to the radio. And I had one of this little AIWA, whatever, however you pronounce it, stereo and cassette recorder. And so I would listen to the radio, and the first couple notes of a song I recognized and liked, I'd press play, you know, record, play and record simultaneously. Record it, I'd wait for the end of it, and I'd stop it. And then I'd have to listen to the radio for another couple hours.
That's why.
And then I'd get another song. And so I made my own 90s, like late 90s, early 2000s mix. Like, you know, just the bands that, you know, everyone was listening to when they were in fourth and fifth grade.
But that's why the DJs talk over the music during that bleed of like before the vocals come in. It's so that people stop doing that because you're going to, when you make those mixtapes, you're always going to get like, oh, well, this version has, you know, Casey Kasem talking for 10 seconds prior to...
Well, that's right. If you listen to some of the old cassettes I made, they start, like, 30 seconds into the song, and they end a couple seconds before the song actually ends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, bam, suddenly Bare Naked Ladies. Bam! Suddenly, you know, I don't know, Three Doors Down or whatever the hell I was listening to. I had terrible taste.
To answer your question directly, I've found recently that whenever I'm working on a piece at home, I need something more than you know, just Spotify playing in the background or the radio or my iTunes, you know, personal music playlist or whatever. I need something additional, and I found
what more do you want?
I want it all.
He wants to have to get up every 45 minutes and move that needle.
Exactly. No, seriously. I mean, I was given a turntable back in 2004, and I've slowly been building a collection of vinyls that are things that I just really appreciate. Like, they aren't just, I bought this because it came out on fucking vinyl. I will specifically seek out records that I enjoy the song so much, you know, from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, that I want to know what they sounded like in that medium that they first came out in.
Right.
So I'll go out and I'll find the record for 50 cents and, you know, I'll play it and listen to it with headphones. It's gotten to the point now where I will seek out specifically music that is meant to be listened to in that analog medium.
Also, I think the old artists prior to digital music and the ability to mix and match and create your own playlists, when an artist made an album, they considered every song.
Yeah.
The album was a piece of art.
Yeah, you could only squeeze four or five songs on the first side.
So when you sat down and were like, okay, this is the first song they're going to hear. This needs to be our first song. Like, they would sit down with the recording studio, with their producer, and be like, okay, this is the order of songs. Like, we need them to hear this song first, this song second. This is the B-side songs. They're not...
It would keep them up at night, stressing over this is the kind of,
like,
order.
But nowadays, people are like, you just throw it on there and put the popular one in the middle, so that way maybe they'll get through at least two of the other ones on the album before they realize that's not the one they actually want to hear from the radio.
Yeah.
And then they'll just go, and then they'll make it, they'll pull it out of the album and drop it into their playlist. But like actual albums, and this is something my mother always complained about when things got cassette tapes, and something my mother always loved about, and she's got like all of her records, my dad's records, the artwork. Like, they would hire a graphic or an illustrator, someone, in most cases. Some cases they go the opposite, they go something very minimal, but you have a large format.
Yeah, 12 by 12.
A 12 by 12, you get to create a piece of artwork that people are going to buy, and in many cases, people are going to hang it on their wall.
Absolutely.
And that's a lot. A 12 by, that's huge.
That's exactly the other thing I was going to say is, outside of the tangible aspect of using and listening to vinyl records, you know, you get such a delight out of moving the needle over or pressing the start button, watching the needle lift up and move over on its own, hearing the initial, like, of the
and that
needle dropping. Yeah. Even if it's a dirty record and you hear a slight crackle, it's still satisfying to some degree. But when it comes to digital stuff, I have a huge-ass monitor now. So with iTunes, I make the album artwork as high quality as possible. Mm-hmm. Anytime I import an album, I try to find, you know, a really high quality album cover because I want to see it. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I will listen to a record solely for the album cover because, I mean, people still will hire artists to make an album cover specifically to match the album. They don't just, you know, pick and choose some fucking clip art from something.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bands that do that, and it's really dissatisfying to, like, have an album that you love and their album cover is just fucking piss poor. Not interesting.
Well, I think it's so... I mean, I feel like if... Maybe he did do this. I don't know. Norman Rockwell, he would have been pre-album or vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
But...
Well, no.
I feel like if he, you know, continued with his work... Just, I have this image in my head whenever I think of vinyl, of the kid sitting... laying on their bed, the record player's behind them at the foot of their bed. They have these ridiculous over-the-ear headphones with the telephone cord coiled cable going to the record player. And they're listening to this, and all they're looking at is the album artwork. Like, so you're infusing your ears with this music.
Mm-hmm.
And you are just staring at the artwork that is correlated to this entire album.
It's a multi-sensory...
I mean, sensory
experience.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's missing a lot with the music experience now. People just, like, oh yeah, I like that song. Like, and you don't even have to... You just go to your phone, you have your everything loaded up, you just press download, it's on your phone, you start listening to it, you don't even... Honestly, there are albums I have... I don't even know what the album... Like, if someone showed me the album cover without any text on it, I wouldn't know what album it was. And then they could sit there and go, oh, this is this album. Like, oh, yeah, no, I love that album. I didn't know that was the artwork they had on it.
Just so you know, Norman Rockwell died in the mid-70s.
Okay.
So he would have known about Led Zeppelin, too.
Yeah.
I feel like we're a bunch of old guys now.
I'm sorry.
Well, for me, it's the appreciation of putting that much effort into... Basically, you're not just throwing songs together to get them out there as quickly as possible. You are creating a piece, a musical work of art. Mm-hmm. That
you're creating a chapter in the book that is the music culture.
So now, in the merchandise world, vinyl is special again. Because it's expensive to produce, it's obviously more expensive than making CDs. Yeah.
Or digital downloads,
which is proving to be unethical in some degrees, so people are going towards vinyl, in which case you get a free digital download code, which is nice, but the tangible aspect of having to stop what you're doing, get up, change the record over, and then once again hearing that initial like lead in to the songs that you're expecting, it's a really nice feeling. And I cannot explain why other than it's a little bit foreign.
I think for me, the few times I have... I don't personally own a record player. My parents have several record players.
Steal them all.
Because... Well, my dad, a couple years ago, was kind of... He bought my mom one of those... A brand new record, a re-release record player. It hooks up to the computer, all this fancy stuff. Because, unfortunately, my mother's old record players... All of them have, you know, the needles have busted, and finding the replacements has been...
Yeah, it is a bitch to find replacements.
Darn near impossible. Yeah. But there's something nice about having to interact with the music you're listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually makes me listen harder because I have to work. When it comes time, after those four tracks have gone by... I have to get up and move things around. And it's like, damn it, I wasn't paying attention to that song. So then I got to go back. I got to find the groove for where the previous song stopped and the next song starts so I can re-listen to that song. It's like, screw it. I'll just go all the way back to the beginning. And I start listening to all four tracks to get back to that track that I might not have. So I tend to listen harder because I can't just skip. I mean, I got to move around between the grooves to try and find the song that I missed.
Yeah,
that story segment was called "How Dutter's Got His Groove Back."
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, the next one will be better.